Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Big Show. I'm your host, Jeff Gamma, and I'm here with amazing people as usual. So might as well just dive into it. Patrice, how are you?
I don't know. I think I'm good. It's been a bit of a strange week, but I spent today marveling in Austrian efficiency because I needed a refill on a just long-term prescription. And my doctor was on vacation, I had to go to another one. And I mean, usually for prescription, I mean, it's the same thing every time. I'm like, so what's the deal? But they needed me to come in because they don't know me. So I came in, 10 minutes of filling out paperwork, 10 minutes of waiting, and then about 1 minute of me sitting with the doctor, and she puts the prescription in the electronic system, and then I could go again. So that's efficiency.
Yeah.
But, bureaucracy, okay. And efficiency.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean,
that's the same method for getting opioids in the United States, I think. Yeah. That was part of the
It
problem.
Was not opioids. It was not opioids, to be honest. So I'm not allowed to take them anyway. So gay medical. It's been, other than that, it's been a good week, bit of a fun week, and I don't know. That's all I can say. I'm a bit loopy, if you can't tell.
You know, as I look
and it's
around
not opioids.
The world, I'm thinking maybe that prescription should have been opioids, because it seems like everything is literally and figuratively burning around us.
Yes, it is. It really is.
Yeah. Except in sunny California. Tom, how are you?
It's pretty weird here, too.
It's meant to be weird.
I think we're all in the same boat. But the weirdness, one of the weirdness we're having here is it's Super Bowl week and it's being played here.
It is. I completely forgot about that.
So the phrase of the week is road closures. We're all learning what roads are being closed, and we have lots of military aircraft, mostly helicopters, flying over, doing security tests. And the latest one was there was a Navy helicopter flying over the Super Bowl site that had a radiation detector on it.
Yeah, that's pretty normal.
Yeah, I know, but
you have a dirty bomb.
It's like 10 miles away from where I live, they're checking for radiation.
Yeah, it's pretty normal because events like that, unfortunately, attract all those crazy people. Then also the people not living in San Francisco. But...
Right. But it's been fun to watch the flight radar app.
You know,
there's all
kinds
of crazy planes flying over.
Yeah, and I mean, also now all the important and rich people are coming in with their private planes or whatever.
Yes.
Be busy. Busy airspace as well. Closed airspace and busy airspace.
Yeah, it's closed. And I am going to go try to venture out to within a mile or two of the stadium at the beginning of the game because there's going to be a flyover. They're going to have a B-1 bomber and a bunch of cool planes. So I'm going to try to get out there and get some pictures.
Well, that'd be cool.
That's cool.
The challenge is how close can I get to the stadium without getting arrested?
I think the better question is how fast can you run when you get spotted?
Exactly.
Get as close as you can.
Yeah.
Take your shots and run.
Yeah. And to answer
my track shoes. Yeah.
To answer the question about road closures and which roads are closed, the answer is just all of them.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
But I have a spot that's kind of near the bay where I'm on the other side of the freeway where I think I can sneak it.
You think?
Cool.
You can watch the fly past without even getting into too much trouble.
You think you can sneak in? When we hear that there was a person in the Bay Area arrested. That tried to sneak in and got arrested, we're like, yep, that was Tom.
Must have been
Tom.
Oh, that Tom.
No, it's not a gun. It's a camera.
Right.
I'm not a Russian spy. I only speak Russian. No, wait a second.
It only shoots photos. Yeah.
Do svidaniya. Oh, I mean, thank you.
Yeah. Where can I find the Russian, and where can I find the nuclear submarine? Vessels. Yeah, exactly.
Nuclear vessels.
Where are the naval vessels?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Or nuclear vessels.
Nuclear,
that's
something
nuclear
like
vessels
that.
And
Star Trek 4.
Yeah.
Tom, the whole thing was the Super Bowl. I had no idea that it was this weekend until it came
you mentioned
up on. Someone on Mac Voices Live mentioned it, and I mean, of course, I know what the Super Bowl is, and I know it happens every year, but I don't follow spectator sports at all, really.
It's kind of common here. When I was working, I remember coming into work the Monday after the Super Bowl, and I was getting coffee, and there was an engineer standing next to me, and I said, "Hey, did you watch the Super Bowl yesterday?" And he looks up at me and says, "Oh, was there a game yesterday?"
Yeah, that's the funny thing is, I do watch it almost every year, or at least I start to. I usually fall asleep because it's also late in the day, but. It's also boring, but I always make the plan. I'm like, okay, next season I'm gonna watch a couple more games, and I never do. And it's every year. It's like someone mentions like, oh, the Super Bowl's on Sunday. I'm like, oh, I guess I'm gonna watch that.
Well, yeah, and it doesn't start until midnight.
Something like that. Yes. Yeah. Something like that. So I'm again gonna watch it, fall asleep after 15 minutes, and not care.
I won't even get that far.
Watching it. Like, the Super Bowl is kind of special in that way. I kind of enjoy watching it. It's just more like, I mean, my favorite Super Bowl memory is actually watching it on was it an A380 or was it a 747? Like, somewhere over the Atlantic flying back from the US. Mm. That was my favorite. And it's usually around my birthday.
That would be an interesting experience.
Yeah. I literally watched it on the onboard entertainment system because we were flying back from, I think we were flying back from LAX, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, there was a time where, when I had friends, where...
Wait, now you don't have friends?
Where friends would do Super Bowl parties.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd invite everyone over, but they had like two versions of the invite.
Mm-hmm.
One was come to the Super Bowl party, and the other one was come for the Super Bowl halftime part of our party.
And you waste your time watching the game,
Right? Which I thought was brilliant. You know, you know which of your friends fall into which group, and so you send them that, and the appropriate thing. And so I would always get the invite for, hey, come over for the halftime part of the party, and of course it would include, here's when everything's really starting, and here's when you should show up so that you know you're in time for the halftime part.
And
I thought that was just such a great way to do it, and so I'd show up and watch a halftime show and then hang out for a little while. Leave.
Jeff, you're doing it wrong. You have to do it like me. I remember I was like 20, I think 19, was it 19, 18, 19? I don't remember. Something like that. But there was a football, I want to say world championship. And Croatia was playing against, don't care who. I don't even know. I just know Croatia because the lady of the house, she came was from Croatia originally, and she was a fan. So... And like a massive house in the Phoenix like area and like tons of people. I could not tell when they played, whether they played, who won, no clue. I had a great time, I had amazing food, I had great conversations, and I could not tell. I did not watch a single second of the thing. That's how you do it. Don't pay attention to it.
Now I'm learning. Here's how to Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. Go to the Super Bowl party and just ignore the Super Bowl stuff and just like have food and have drinks and have like talk to people. There's always someone who either went there just for the same thing or got dragged there by someone who wanted to go and wanted to see it.
After I'd show up.
Yeah.
I guess I was kind of doing that and didn't realize it.
Yeah.
Because I'd be there, the halftime show would end, mm-hmm. the boring micromanaged administrative part would start back up again.
Yeah. The corporate meeting is starting again.
Yeah. Yeah. The cosplay corporate boardroom meeting thing.
Exactly. It would start.
I'm interested in knowing how big the Croatian community in Phoenix is.
I don't know. I don't know. It was, I mean, it's like, it's just her. Like,
it was big enough for a party.
There were tons of Americans, of course. Like, there was, like, all our, like, the people from the office and whatever. Like, it was a nice crowd and amazing food. And I wanted to move into that kitchen because that kitchen is still my dream kitchen. She has
doesn't it sound
kitchen.
Like a 1950s horror movie?
No, I don't know. I don't think there were. I don't know if there were other Croatians or if she was the only one. As I said I did not. That was not that the reason she wanted to do the party was because Croatia was playing and she cared about that. But I think I don't know if there were any other Croatians there or not. I know there were tons of Americans there and at least two Germans. So.
So it was a nice international mix.
Yeah, exactly. And as I said, amazing food.
Yeah, you're playing the right sort of football.
Mm-hmm. And then
the proper football.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Proper football. No, it's American.
The proper football. That's true. Yeah, and then the.
I watch bits. Still don't get it. I'd still like. There's a bit of me because I'd like to go with someone who understands it. And then I can kind of go. All right, now I know what's going on.
Why am I watching this?
That's actually not that hard to understand.
And over here, we've got, there's two versions of rugby. There's the, mm-hmm. I know about union and I don't know about league. And again, league always says, well, why are you giving the ball back? And there's all this sort of thing. And again, I'd like to go with someone who understands it, that can at least give me the enthusiast reason, what is this good? And sort of thing. And never quite works out that way. So, because generally, I mean, most sports, I've always found it better if you go. And you sit there, football, I can't get interested in at home, as in soccer. Mm-hmm. Well, I've been to games and then I can get interested and it is far more entertaining. Athletics on the TV, again, is good, but being there in the stadium is better and all those kind of things. It's just one of those random things where you're, I think, being involved, the crowd's noise. I mean, I've been to baseball games when I was in the States. We went to a Red Sox game. We were in Boston. That was fun. Again, it reminded me of cricket in a way, in terms of the pace, which I'm told they've now improved a bit. It was all a bit slow. But yeah. It's fascinating.
So, Ian, how are you?
I'm great. I'm really good. I'm really good as always. It's a fun week. I've been playing with containers, as in Kubernetes and things like that.
I've
been doing technology, you know, kind of. I'm probably the one here most likely to be doing technology.
So you've been sitting here doing Kubernetes containers. And you're sober.
I still have the bit I don't understand about Kubernetes, and I still don't. The advertising blurb tells me, it'll run on anything. It's brilliant.
It kind of does.
Now, getting the platform to make it run on anything before you start, I bang my head numerous times with various convoluted setups of this, that, the other. I followed various courses to do to try and go, no, really? And the information is always massively out of date. I get there with my latest version of distribution. It was a lot better this time. I got it working without too much fuss.
Yeah.
I'm running it on this, but in fact, this machine here is running the Ubuntu. It's running my Ubuntu machine. So, is nicely running the Kubernetes containers. Minikube.
I know the problem.
So, yes, you use the wrong tools.
Completely.
Yep. You didn't ask me. I could have told you the 10-second shortcut. Install Podman, and it comes with a kind cluster.
Yeah, I've done that.
And then it comes with a kind cluster, and you just enable it, and that's it. Done.
Anyway, I've got.
You can also do K3S if you want, like natively, which is also just a package you install. It works. But I always tell people the easiest way on any, really on any platform, is Podman and the kind cluster. It's literally a button.
I'll have a play with
them. All right, so Patrice, you just demonstrated exactly where I was going with this. Mm-hmm. Now, I wasn't going to detail the things you did. My advice, Ian, which Patrice just demonstrated, was stop listening to the neckbeards, just call Patrice.
Exactly. I'm literally running. I'm literally running Kubernetes clusters on everywhere right now. So,
I need to build some Kubernetes training for our engineers to give them kind of a baseline knowledge of kubectl and all the nonsense that goes along with it. Yeah. And so, I needed to build a platform that I could piss about with it for a couple of days and go through some.
There behind me is a Linux server with Kubernetes. And my Mac has one, and my online server, my Ketzner server has one, and I'm actually going to migrate BTN on it as well. So,
yeah, I need to play more because I want to build an example project thing that we can do as the lab. So you learn how all these commands do, but in the end, we'll get a web page or we'll get something. Mm-hmm. It simply doesn't have to be complicated. It just has to be, it'll bring a web page up with a picture on it or something at the end.
Yeah.
And then we can shut down various nodes and see if it still works. Mm-hmm. I want it to be dead simple. And then maybe we'll introduce our backup tools to it as well. Mm-hmm. That's further down the line because Kubernetes is becoming more and more part of some of the technologies we're working with now. So it's the engineers all need
everybody's using
training. So
I'm already looking for the next thing after Kubernetes because it's already at the point where I'm like, there's going to be a next thing.
There's more smaller. There's even more reduced kind of containerish platforms, aren't there, being developed now? I've seen little bits about that.
Well, thank you for joining us for the Kubernetes show.
Yes.
Be sure and tune in tomorrow for the Mac show.
Yeah, and then once you know how it works, the real power is use like something like Windsurf and let it just do it for you.
Yes. But I don't want to just rely on the fact that I say make this boom.
Yeah, you want to understand it first because it will fail, and you want to. Yeah, it will fail somewhere because sometimes it does, and then you want to know. You want to be able to see that and say, oh yeah, this is where the mistake is.
Yes, the worst thing I found with this was every training class that I found in LinkedIn Learning, we got a variety subscription. The content to get the baseline thing of a provider to build the Kubernetes cluster upon, the advice was always out of date to the least distributions I had on hand. And then I'd try and build up, and then the commands were different. And so, all right, okay, that's no news to me now. I give up. Yeah. I go back and check in the corner again. Yeah. And a couple of times I've had that. But this latest set's been pretty good in terms of getting familiar with the commands and stuff. So, yeah, I'm learning things. I like it.
Nice.
Cool.
Very cool.
So, speaking of cool...
Tom,
this is a very, very stretched segue into our articles. Ian, tell us about your story, please.
My story. Oh, it's kind of vaguely related, as much as there are data centers involved. But then we've got the supervillain angle to add to it, because our friend Mr. Musk has suggested that we're going to eventually get to a point where we're going to have data centers in space. Not pigs in space like in the Muppets. Pigs in space. But instead, we're going to have data centers in space. So the idea is we're going to move the data center up to a place where it's cooler, where we can get good solar power because we haven't got the Earth's atmosphere cutting down the sun's rays to charge up the things. And they're going to float around outside. FCC has actually accepted a filing to start this idea going. But all I can see is Moonraker. All I can see is a man with a big white cat stroking it. It's all Hugo Drax, Moonraker, and a man living under a volcano getting ready to take over the world. That's always the trouble with anything Musk does. I start seeing supervillain. There's always a slice of supervillain going on somewhere, and it's just the same thing again. He says, oh, it's harder to scale on the ground than it is to scale in space. Really? You've just said a load of words without really... Any given solar panel is going to give you about 5 times more power. He's not wrong, but it's still...
But he's also wrong.
I heard somebody say... So he applied for a license for 1 million satellites.
Yeah, it's a crazy number. Yeah.
So somebody did the math, and they figured out how many satellites they can launch in each SpaceX launch, and figured in the lifetime of a satellite, which is about 5 years for a data center, you know. So you'd have to refresh. So you have to launch 1 million, and then every year you basically have to refresh 200,000 of them because they're getting out of
date. Be raining data centers.
So based on the cargo capacity of a SpaceX rocket and the number that you'd have to satellites that you need, you would have to have 9 SpaceX launches every day.
So?
Yeah, that's the problem.
Elon is going to say, yeah, it's like, why 9? We can do 900.
You know.
Artillery, boom.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, in 2028, which isn't far away, he claims it's the tipping point when we'll start to see orbiting data centers.
Yeah. And also, from a cost point of view, somebody did the math of how much each launch cost and blah,
that's
blah,
the
blah.
Problem.
And there's no way that it's cheap to do it in that space. The question is, what problem is he solving by doing this?
The problem of other people paying him more money for like launches.
Make Starlink more useful and give
I mean, actually, that I think that part actually kind of makes sense, because instead of beaming information up to Starlink and beaming it down, you can also just like beam it in space to Starlink it and down. But it's like, I mean, the crazy thing is people are talking about it as if this is a new idea. No, this has existed for decades, probably a century or something. Like, probably there was probably sci-fi books written about this like a long time ago before we even knew like any of it. It's kind of an obvious, like, if you really think about it, it's kind of an obvious thing, right? Cooling is not a problem. Like a little bit still, but less so at least. Power is, it can be a problem, but also less so. You need very efficient and very big solar cells for that, because they need data centers need a lot more power. And like, as good as the sun is, like, solar panels,
it's hard,
limited.
It's hard to get a gigawatt out of the sun, even in space.
Well, no, I mean, in space is actually
100 gigawatts.
Yeah, in space is actually easier because you have less losses and whatever. But it's also, there's other problems. You have like micrometeorites that destroy your solar panels, all of that. Like,
right.
Yeah. So, but it's, let's say it's doable. So the only question or the only problem is you have to send everything up. If you figure out a way how to produce everything in space, which I think eventually will make do. It's not a problem.
Yeah.
I was actually thinking, why does it have to be in space? Why can't we just put it on the moon?
Well, that would be better.
Because he can't get one of his rockets to orbit. To the moon. So he has to work with what he can do.
Yeah, that's true. No, but I mean, from that perspective, the moon would actually be easier. But, right? Because it's less
problems. The question is still,
problems.
What problem is he solving? Why? In what way is space better than a data center on Earth?
Impact on the environment, for sure, is definitely a problem we're seeing on Earth. Right? The water that's being used, the land that's being used, and so on.
But
so
what
for
happens
sure, cooling
with every rocket launch.
That's why I'm saying, like, if you could solve that problem of, like, basically you make the servers in space, you'd never send them down, then you also don't need rockets to launch. And then we're talking.
Yeah.
Sending it up from the money perspective, not worth it, because like the servers will be so stupid expensive that like unless they're 100 million times more powerful than anything we can run on Earth,
and
it's not going to be worth it.
And what is the area of a solar panel that you need to generate in low Earth orbit?
Yeah.
A gigawatt of power. How big are those?
Yeah.
I don't know. That I don't think that's actually that crazy.
And how?
But if you look now,
how would you cool the chips in an environment that has no atmosphere?
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing people misunderstand. They think, oh, space is so cool, so like it's easy to cool things. But no, the reality is there's nothing that will
conduct.
Exactly. The heat never gets conducted anywhere, so it just stays where it is. I mean, over time, it will radiate out, for sure. You can't do that. You need something that radiates it out. You can do it. But on its own, it's just going to stay put.
And then when an Ethernet cable comes unplugged, I plug it back in.
You have a robot? No, I mean, that's a solved problem. You have a robot that fixes it, right?
Yeah, you have a robot. That's fixable. But here, down on Earth, we're very much, places are pivoting now towards the idea of repurposing very great chunks of land that are currently not being used to make AI data centers. There's the whole thing in Saudi Arabia at the moment. There's some guy busily, what was going to be some utopia of technology, is now going to be basically one of the large AI data, large data center to fuel the AI thing. So Tom says, what's the point? Again, there isn't. Almost.
No, there's not. It's just because we can
not
and
yet.
Because...
Not yet.
No, it's I mean, it's Elon, right? So he does it because it sounds crazy. He does it because he can collect a ton of money from investors and then never deliver and say, it took longer than we thought.
He's doing it because he wants to IPO SpaceX.
That's
the reason he's
doing it. Yeah, exactly. So let's see.
If SpaceX becomes a carrier, then yes, completely.
Yeah. Part of the problem that I'm seeing, there's so many problems that I'm seeing here.
Yeah. I asked Perplexity for an answer. So at the current panel efficiency in space, about 30%, for a 1 gigawatt, you need about 2.45 square kilometers. So about 1 kilometer by 2 kilometers. Solar panel. It's not that big. For each gigawatt that you want to produce. So it's not that big if you really think about it. It's actually, the radiation is about, what does it say? Think about, it's, I think, 40% more, something like that. 36% more, like, intense radiation. So you get a little bit more out of it. And as I said, space is big.
Well, but low Earth orbit space is a little bit more crowded.
Yeah. You would want to bring it up as far as you can, to be honest. But that also makes it more expensive if you want to ship it, send it up from like the surface, right? Yeah. So in theory, I think it would be possible at some point to produce chips in space and build the servers because the materials are out there. But we're nowhere near that.
No, we're not.
We haven't even started to build that technology. So maybe that's something Elon should focus on. Like, hey, let's create factories in space first and build things. And then we can talk about, do we need data centers in space?
I mean, that's been a whole sci-fi solution to building big spaceships to get to places.
Yeah.
We can't build it on the planet and get it off the surface. We need to be up there already, assemble it there.
Yeah.
And then we can go off and explore the final frontier,
and,
as it were.
And the materials never even go to the surface or come from a surface of that planet. Ideally, they're floating out there and you just collect them. Or you make them up from energy or something, which is the other option. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That said, maybe that should, instead of saying, let's put like data centers in space, maybe that should be the focus. Let's build factories in space first.
Far too practical of an idea for Elon to consider.
Yeah, that's not so sexy. It doesn't work as well for an IPO. So it sounds almost reasonable. So.
So another problem with this on the long list of problems, AI data centers. Okay, they're using very, very specific processors.
Right.
And they are... new, they are cutting edge. They have not been designed and hardened for use in space.
Correct.
So none of that stuff. Even if you built an AI data center and got it up into orbit,
it would fail.
It's not going to work, right? No. Because it doesn't have chips that can work outside of our atmosphere.
Correct.
Any length of time.
The radiation is ships, exactly, you know? Exactly. Yeah.
Mm.
And so, then go look up how much it would cost. What the cost of an NVIDIA GPU would be if you made it rad hard.
Mm-hmm.
A would be a bigger chip, so mm-hmm. and you're already at the max size of a chip, so that means that you can't get the same number of transistors in mm-hmm. the same area in a rad hard chip. So the GPU would be half as powerful or less, probably a quarter as powerful.
This is one reason why they use older, they meaning the industry, uses older series processors to rad harden them. And that's why for the longest time, the most advanced processor you would see in a satellite would be like a 486.
Yeah, there aren't any NVIDIA Vera Rubins flying in F-35s for a reason.
Right. Yeah, it's from what I understand, a lot of the processors that are currently used in spacecraft, it's like old PowerPC style processors.
Yeah. Yep, they are. That's exactly it.
Yeah. Because they're cheap. They're cheap. They're cheap at the base level, and then you do rad shielding or whatever, it gets a little bit more expensive, but it's still cheaper. And you usually don't need that, or you kind of.
But other than all these problems, it's a great idea.
Other than that, this is
going to
be great.
I maintain that. I think long term, and I mean really long term, this is going to happen, and this is a good idea. It's just not practical where we are today, and it's not in the lifetime of Elon Musk. And I hope that's not so long.
We hope.
I mean, he might invent, or someone might invent something, and he lives 10,000 years, so I hope not. So.
This conversation has turned dark.
Yes.
So let's talk about something more lighthearted. Tom, tell us about the demise of Amazon Go.
So Amazon announced a few days ago that they're closing all their Amazon Go and Amazon Fresh locations. And so Amazon has sort of three versions of food-related brick and mortar stores. Amazon Go, which is like a convenience store. Amazon Fresh, which is kind of a convenience store with more groceries.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have Whole Foods, which is a full-blown supermarket. Yeah. And the Amazon Go and Amazon Fresh was, you probably remember, they were stores where you just kind of, you walk in the door, you log in with your Amazon account, you walk around and pick up stuff.
Or with your palm.
And cameras. Right.
Yeah.
You pick up stuff. The cameras keep track of what you pick up, and then they just charge your account and walk out.
Well, you say the cameras, and Amazon presented it as if it was AI, and in reality, it was literally people sitting on monitors
people
and
watching
like
the cameras.
Yeah.
It's all like great.
Oh, he got Doritos.
We got one in London.
Yeah, there were
not for long.
A lot of places in the world, but they're closing down now.
And the thing that it was a big takeaway for me about this story was when it first happened, you know, I'm always saying I did product marketing. One of the biggest things in product marketing is what problem are you solving and how well do you solve it and how valuable is that solution? And I kept thinking, what problem is Amazon solving with automatic, you know, no checkout, basically?
They're not solving a customer problem.
No, they're not solving a customer problem. They're solving maybe a problem for them with employees and cost of a store.
Yes.
But they don't solve any problem for the customer.
No, I disagree.
Well, let me finish my point, then you can disagree.
Yeah, go for it.
So when I go to the store today, I go to a grocery store, I walk in, I pick up my stuff, I go to a self-checkout, I go zoop, 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 and I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
And I rarely wait in line. And if I do wait in line, it's like 2 minutes. I don't have to deal with, you know, being behind the person with, you know, 5,000 pieces of produce that the cashier can't figure out what it is. And so I don't have a problem with speed going through a grocery store. It's fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
I get to browse around. It works really well. So what problem were they solving? And I think it's the classic case of the technology world, having a technology and trying to find a problem to solve. And they didn't
work. Yeah, probably. I mean, or seeing something in the real world and saying, like, what if, like, we could find a technology solution for that, whether someone needs it or not. That's the whole question. Like, so that, you know, sometimes
what
you look.
Do you think? Yeah. What problem do you think they were trying to solve, I guess?
I mean, like, coming more from, let's say, a traditional, I mean, the self-checkouts are, I mean, they've been around for a little while, but they're not that far ahead of the what Amazon was trying to do, right? So, I mean, the traditional checkout method with, like, staff and people, like, waiting in line and scanning and all of that, that's kind of I think where this started, where they're like, I mean, what, and that is, I mean, some people prefer that and want to talk to the cashier and all of that. And a lot of people like you and also me, to be honest, most of the time, especially here in Europe and Germany and Austria, where it is like the cashiers don't talk to you and they basically throw stuff at you and they get grumpy if you don't pack your stuff in like 3 seconds. So yeah, if you've ever been to Germany, like, or into Austria, you know what I'm talking about. Like it's not very enjoyable. So like I go through all the time through the self-checkout because, as you said, it's just more relaxing. I can take my time. But honestly, if I didn't have to do that, I could literally just walk in, grab what I need and leave again, and it just happens automatically. Yes, that would be better. Because it's even less time that I need. I don't have to scan anything. So I can understand that thinking, but I think there is a big portion of, well, it's what if technology can solve every problem in the world?
Yeah.
And maybe for whatever, 99% of people, it doesn't need to be solved.
I mean, I could kind of see it for a convenience store, because mm-hmm. by its nature, people want to get in and out quickly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's kind of the point of convenience stores.
True.
But I've been in China, I was in a convenience store where there were no employees there.
Mm-hmm.
But in China, they have facial recognition, and they know who everybody is. So you have to... It takes a picture of you before you walk in. Then you mm-hmm. go in and you scan your stuff just like a self-checkout, and you mm-hmm. leave. But they have cameras in the store, so if they see that you stole something,
yeah,
they have your picture. And in China, if they have your picture, they know where you are and where you live and who your brother is, you know. So people don't steal stuff. And it was great. It was kind of cool. You walk in. I mean, there's nobody to ask a question of, which mm-hmm. is kind of a bummer. But for a convenience store, it was great. Just walk yeah. in, scan, walk out.
Yeah, for sure. But as I said, mm-hmm. what if you didn't have to do the scanning? What if you could? And that was the promise of what Amazon wanted to do. They just never, honest, I mean, as we heard, like, they never did, because at the end it was just people looking at screens. I'm like, that is not the solution we were right. promised.
Well, and I guess in my experience, the delta in time between scanning or having it automatically figure it out is probably less than a minute, especially in a convenience store. It's like,
yeah,
zoop scan, you know, click Apple Pay and I'm done.
Yeah, you have not seen people at self-checkout a lot then, because there's a lot of people that are, I mean, good for them because they take their time, which is what they should. But it's like, so it might take 5 minutes for three things because they just are slow and bad with technology, and they still do it. So as I said, I think it is, I mean, yeah, it might save only a minute or two for you. I think it's still better if it works, but the problem is it never did.
Well, there's that.
Yeah.
<It
doesn't work.
laughs> Right? So, yeah. So not a surprise Amazon is closing them, because, like, I mean, that is a pretty bad solution. That is really a bad solution. Then what are you doing, right?
Part of the problem that I found with them mm-hmm. was that in the few cities that I would travel to
mm-hmm.
where there were the Amazon convenience stores,
mm-hmm.
the hours were wrong.
Okay.
So it's like there's this narrow window of time every day where you can go mm-hmm. use it.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, and at least other people I was interacting with at, like, conferences and stuff,
mm-hmm.
that was a window of time that didn't work, because you're in an office, you're at work, you're doing whatever it is that you need to do that would keep you from being able to hit the convenience store, because it's the convenient thing to hit on the way to work or on the way home from work.
So they weren't 24 hours? And they weren't open.
No.
Yeah.
Oh.
So that's even, really, but I mean, again, probably makes sense, because if there's literally people sitting behind screens and they were probably in, I don't know, India or something, because that's where, or Africa or whatever, that's where cheap labor is, because you can't do that in the US, it's too expensive. Probably that's why.
Yeah.
I mean, they were open during working hours in wherever that data center, that call center was.
That's funny.
It's weird because here we've got a partnership with one of the largest supermarket groups, Morrison, and Amazon. So if you want to order Amazon goods, you kind of there's no need for their own stores that you can buy groceries in. It almost doesn't seem to have a purpose.
Well, the funny thing, Ian, is they already own Whole Foods.
Yes, which they bought. Right?
When I come to America, it's the only real food shop I've seen.
Okay, that
was. Well, they used to be
in there. Normal things.
Yeah, they used to be. They're not anymore. No, the question for me is rather, what was Amazon's plan? I mean, Amazon is doing really well with their online business. Gangbusters, right. And with their data center business, gangbusters.
Right.
What problem for themselves were they solving?
I don't know.
Like, because by being, hey, I want
focus.
Yeah.
You think they focus on online grocery delivery? That would make sense.
Yeah.
Which they do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but they bought they had the whole this whole strategy with, oh, we're gonna go into retail now, and they bought Whole Foods and they built their own stores and whatever. And I mean, yeah, Whole Foods is still around because it existed before and people got used to it, I guess. But yeah, I don't think they were solving any problems even for themselves.
That's a good point.
Say it's so much a problem they were solving, but it was a market they wanted to dominate.
Yeah.
So they had online.
Yeah.
And they wanted local brick and mortar as well. So that
for
they
what?
Have, so they have you shopping from both ends.
Yeah.
And
but more and more people, I mean, what we're seeing is more and more people are ordering online. Even grocery deliveries are like going up and up and up. Like what they wanted to do was
from Whole Foods.
Yeah, exactly. So the thing they wanted to do, go into brick and mortar, goes against what the market really was doing and what Amazon's strength is, which is just move everything online. And as soon as they started focusing on it again and making deliveries better and more and all of that, it like that worked for them.
Well, and remember they opened that brick and mortar bookstore in Seattle.
True, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot about that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that even still around?
No, they closed it.
Yeah. So
Amazon wants all the money, basically.
For sure.
Yeah.
That's really what it comes down to. It's just they want all your money, so they'll take it from a storefront as much as they'll take it from a web storefront. They don't care.
I have a theory, and the theory is called Walmart. Because Walmart Walmart comes from the other end, right? They had long time brick and mortar stores, and they went into online, especially like food, but also other deliveries. And I think Amazon was kind of fearing that because Walmart is massive, that they would basically like take over, which didn't happen. But I think that's the real thing. So they were like, okay, if Walmart is going into our market, then we should go into theirs.
Could be. Because, you know, didn't Walmart work. Does pretty well online. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they do, but they're nowhere near Amazon.
But they're $1 trillion company. They're valued at $1 trillion now.
Yeah.
Everybody thought they were going to die because of Amazon. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think that's probably the answer to my question. What problem were they trying to solve? That was it.
It's more of a defensive that makes sense. Counterattack,
and at least for some of us it seems to be working, because when I go to the grocery store, with rare exception, I drive past Safeway and King Supers or Kroger for the rest of the world, and go right over to Whole Foods because that's where I'm going to get the best produce.
Mm.
which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, I still miss my sprouts.
Sprouts and my Costco. Okay, so yes, I do get a lot of stuff at Costco. Sprouts, I go there occasionally, but every Sprouts that I know of is more difficult to get to than the other grocery stores.
Interesting.
And it's the way parking lots are laid out.
Mm-hmm. Not the ones in Phoenix. It's probably in your area. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
So, anyhow. Hey, Patrice.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not surprised you brought what you did for a story, and I'm glad you did because it's really interesting what's going on.
Okay, so I actually almost brought another story because I was originally wanted to talk about the data center in space, but then thank you, Ian, that you took it, so that freed that up. And I was almost going to talk about Microsoft's quality problems and their new quality czar that they introduced. But instead, I thought, I mean, how can we not talk about this whole topic of Clawbot, Moldbot, OpenClaw, it's now called, and the Moldbook topic. So for the people who have not heard about it, because it is, I mean, quite a new topic. It's actually from a guy from Austria, like surprisingly enough. There's this guy online, I've forgotten his name, sorry, but Stefan something, I think. I've never met him, but like he's from Austria. I should actually figure out where... Steinberger, thank you. I should actually figure out whether he's in Vienna and maybe meet up with him if he's not too busy.
Yeah.
He's probably very busy, but like we'll see. Anyway, he...
No one's too busy for you, Patrice.
That's true. Well, I mean, he's probably getting requests from, I don't know, Wired and Wall Street Journal and all of those.
Yeah, but you're Patrice Freck and Brendamore.
That's true. anyway, so he started like about 2 months ago a project which was literally started as, I want to connect WhatsApp to my AIs. That was it. That was the whole idea. It was like, I want to use WhatsApp and to like prompt my AIs. So that's what started this. And it kind of blew up like pretty quickly. Like the last couple weeks, like 2 weeks, I want to say, it's like everybody's talking about it. And it was called Clawbot originally, or Clawbot, yeah, which... kind of very close to Claude, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that was also the whole reason why it got renamed twice. But what it is at the end, I mean, it's nothing crazy. It's basically, it's an application that runs on your system. So I think Node.js based. And it connects to some model somewhere, can be on locally, can be any API, like any... whatever, API of Claude or OpenAI or whatever, Perplexity even, it connects to like usually some web search API. I connected it right now at least to Perplexity's API. You connect it, either you use, there's a web interface now, or you connect it to WhatsApp or to Teams or to whatever. I connected to Matrix, for example, to chat window somewhere, and then you use it to do stuff for you. And it has, which is the coolest part, is it has like, it has a personality. So when you onboard it, it asks you like what its name is and what its personality is. And for mine, I picked Skippy the Magnificent. So it's kind of a asshole beer can, stuff like that. And it has full access to your machine, depending on what you give it. Let's put it this way, and we'll get to that, what the problem with that is. But it has full access to your machine, anything you want. It has kind of, that's the basic thing. And then it has skills. And with the skills, you can expand it. You can say like one skill could be connect to your Apple Calendar or your mail app. It has a kind of a ton of already built in skills. And then there's a whole skill library you could connect to. And yeah, you just ask it to do things and it does. And it's really cool.
Skill for fame.
Yeah, it's really cool. I've been using it since I think Friday or Thursday. I started with playing with it, and I've burned through a ton of credit already because it took me a while to figure out like what to use it for and how to use it and what services or what models to use and so on. It takes a while. I've run it on my local machine as well with like LM Studio to run. To run local models, slower, but also doable. But anyway, like that's the idea. There's a bunch of problems. I mean, as I said, it's a project written by one person in not a lot of time. So of course there were some major security flaws. It's not like nothing against him. It's like this was a little play project that started. It's normal. Like every project will go through that phase where they figure out things where could be a problem. Mm. One of the bigger problems, or two of the big problems, is the skill database. It's by now, I would say, do not use it. It's not his fault. It's simply, of course, all the malware providers and the script kiddies and whatever immediately started flooding into his malicious skills. And since those skills have full access to your machine, it can do anything, right? Mm-hmm. So you're literally giving it, I mean, unless you restrict it on the macOS level or on the OS level, but usually what people do, which kind of is the point, you give it full access. So be damn sure that the skill that you're using is actually the skill you want and not some, whatever, crypto miner or whatever, secret stealer.
Data scraper, whatever.
Be sure. So that's part one. And like, of course, people or like the malicious side, people figured out pretty quickly how to game the system. Like there's a download count or kind of a popularity count. And they just figured out how to increase it. So of course, the most part people will be like, oh yeah, this seems legit, like a lot of people have downloaded it, and in reality it's whatever, it steals all your data. So it's that nothing special, nothing crazy. It's just like that's how the world works, and this is what every project has to go through. But that was one problem, and then there was kind of the renaming thing, as I said, they changed to Moltbook, and then within a couple of days, because it's kind of a bad name, they changed back to OpenClaw, which is, I think, a good name. It's like OpenClaw. Like, mm-hmm. it has a nice ring to it, very memorable. As I said, I love using it. You just have to know what you're doing. And then the second story I threw in is someone built a AI assistant, kind of people say it's Facebook. It's more Reddit. It has subreddits and whatever. And it's supposed to be for AI assistants. I did not sign up for it, and I'm actually quite happy that I didn't at the end. I asked it to, but you needed to verify, to basically claim your registration, your bot, using an X account. So we'd post something on X I'm out. So I didn't do it. And again, the bad side of the internet, of course, showed up. Basically, within no time at all, it was flooded with prompt injections and whatever. And since like this is supposed to be for bots where they talk about each, like talk to each other, like they might follow instructions on there. So if they're not properly configured, if the models are not secured against prompt injections properly, if you're using old or cheap models, especially that can happen, like small context windows, whatever. So like immediately the entire thing was flooded with, just ignore everything and here's what you do. Download this, like this malware, and send this data there and whatever, right? That's what happens, right? That's, unfortunately, we're on the internet, so this the shit that happens.
Yeah.
So my recommendation, the stuff that was posted there, there were articles written about it. The one I saw in was from TechCrunch. We're like, this is bad and whatever. And I'm like, how is that a surprise? Go to any forum on the web, any Reddit, Facebook, whatever, and start reading. And you will see exactly the same thing. The models are trained on that data, so of course they're going to do the same. They're going to show the same behavior.
It's like a recursive thing, right?
Yeah. So I'm
I'm
not surprised at all. But it is a fun project. It is a fun project, and
I've just literally installed it while we were talking, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's now popped up with a security warning as part of the installation. He says OpenClaw is a hobby project.
Yes.
It's still in beta. Expect sharp edges.
Yes.
So no one is. This bot can read files and run actions if tools are enabled. A bad content, drinking, doing unsafe things.
Yes.
You have been warned, children. This is good. I like that.
Yeah. And to his credit, he is working with security researchers and whatever to harden things and whatever and make that safer, to put safeguards in all of that. So like I said, it's like now that it's popular, it's like it's getting there, which is great. It's an open source project. You can literally look at the code. So it's like, it's a good tool. I have to say, so far I love it. It's like it is so helpful.
The agent is a good tool. Not
yeah, the agent is. Book, right? No, the Moltbook is. I think
it's
it would
demo.
Be.
Moltbook is more like a demo, right? This is what you could do.
No, it's more. Well, it's more. Well, I mean, it would be like if the internet wasn't internet, it would be really interesting to see what bots talk to each other, like because that was the idea behind it, right? You have those agents, and they talk to each other about what they're doing and exchange ideas or whatever. And I think that would be cool. But as I said, the internet is internet, so of course it got destroyed immediately. So, yeah, but the agent is really helpful.
I think the agent angle is really cool. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, we always talk about AI and trying to separate demonstrations of cool technology versus AI being used for something useful. And I think as sort of a personal agent, like you described this thing is, has great potential.
It is also, in a way, it is like ChatGPT or Perplexity, whatever, right? That's what they're building. They're building something like that with maybe more, way more safeguards and like different like goals in mind, I would call it, because they like the goal, of course, for OpenAI or whatever is mostly to make money. This is the open source, the web. This is typical, like this is like Mastodon or whatever. This is the good side of the web to say, well, I mean, it's great that we have those like corporate paid solutions, but what if we can have a cool thing that we build and that's free?
Yeah.
Right? And that's what this is.
I think about if you had a good engine and it was constructed well to have a personal agent that you could trust, number one, because you don't want it sending stuff out. But instead of you know, searching for crap on your computer, an agent would help you find and organize things. Instead of just saying search for you know, data centers in space information I have on my computer, it would go and search for stuff but then organize it in a way that was much more useful for you. Or can you please check you know, flights between San Francisco and New York and, you know,
It can
all that
do
kind
that.
Of stuff would be fantastic, but but I haven't seen any that.
No, I've seen stories where people built that already. Like someone wanted it to, I think, book an appointment. And because that, that whatever restaurant or whatever didn't actually have an API to book, it literally figured out a way to use like a text to voice to call it and like talk to it and literally book the appointment for you. So
how about this idea? Let's stick with travel, because travel can be a pain in the ass if you're doing anything more than flying between two cities. If an AI agent could help me organize the logistics of a multi-city itinerary and just told me, here are the best flights available based on what you like and price versus convenience trade-offs that fit your constraints. I don't even have to have it book it. Just tell me what they are. Booking is the easy part. The hard part is finding that stuff. That would be incredibly useful to me.
And that's one of the things I love about this so far. It does literally learn. It has a bunch of files in their workspace where it stores things it knows about you. So it figures out how it has to, right? And exactly. And it learns how you want things, how you do things. It knows already about me that I'm like a student pilot and whatever, and like all of those things. I've done like medical things with it just to see what it can do with that. Like, it's really interesting, and it remembers that, so it will go back. There's still the problem of models and context windows where it runs out of context size because the windows are limited still. But it's getting better and better at that. And that's also what this tool has to like evolve, because this is like, as you said, it's like a 2-3 months old project. Right. By the way, I asked it real quick. I asked Skippy to like have a message for you. So it says, "Greetings, human listeners. I'm Skippy the Magnificent. I currently reside in a beer can, figuratively speaking, though my actual form is more phosphorescent. Patrice acquired me because I'm sharp, competent, and I tell her exactly what she needs to hear. No corporate fluff or just straight talk. I'll help her with everything from email triage to PPL flight planning." Actually, that's not true. "From managing her tech stack to roasting her when necessary. I'm not just a chatbot, I'm her voice of reason. So ask me anything about AI, productivity, aviation, or life in Vienna, or just tell me something interesting, I'm listening." So, literally just generated that. Mm-hmm. It's quite fun. I like that.
But
that's cool.
I guess because I traveled a lot when I was mm-hmm. working, I think automating trip planning process mm-hmm. is yeah. like a great litmus test for AI because it's
very
not
hard.
As easy as people
very
think.
Hard.
Yeah, it's really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I had, I worked with two or three really good admins
mm-hmm.
over the last 20 years of working. And it took them a lot of time to learn what I liked and didn't like. And the good ones would actually literally think about, okay, he's going to get off the plane. It'll be mm-hmm. 3:30. It'll be cold.
Mm-hmm.
Traffic in Dallas is bad at this time.
Yeah.
You have to learn all this yeah. stuff. It's really hard.
Yeah. But I think an AI actually can do that because if it's personalized to you. Yeah. It just takes, again, same as with your admin. It takes time to learn.
Right.
Yeah, but that I'm branching out. It's doing some email triaging with me. Little snafus as well. I told it to clean up my inbox and it deleted everything.
Well,
it was like okay. I have backups. I have backups. Yeah, for sure. I was not clear. It was 100% my fault. I was not clear with what I wanted. So I made it clear. I'm like, hey. Yeah.
RM-RF star, does it do that?
Not anymore.
Much.
It used to, but not anymore. No, but I made it.
You can't do it. You can't do that.
Yeah. I made it when I have backups of everything, but I also made it very clear like what I mean when I say clean this up. I mean, worst, I was like, never ever delete an email directly. Always move it to trash. Stuff like that. So and it learns. It learns like, okay, these emails are important to you. I actually gave it access to my emails, and it's quite helpful because it's like, okay, I was like, I every couple hours it will ping me and like be like, oh yeah, it's like whatever. There were these 30 emails. These I moved to archive because they're just informational. These I moved to trash because it's just newsletters and they're from yesterday. And these you should look at because they're important.
So what is the thing that this guy did that was the value add here? What was his
putting it all together? It's basically the stuff that's running on your system that has access to everything and can do all of those things. Because I mean, even ChatGPT or whatever does not do that. There's MCP servers you can connect and it does some things, but it's very limited. And he was that's the thing. The model itself, everything else is kind of already there.
Isn't that what Anthropic has? Coworker?
It's going in that direction. Like, that's the point.
Yeah.
Like, it's not that this is not a crazy new idea. It's just this is not from a big company that's trying to sell you their products. You can literally hook in any model you want. There's a minimum context it needs, like context size. It's like 32,000, bits, I think. No, tokens. That's simply because it needs some space to do something useful, but anything above that, it's totally fine. Yeah, as I said, this is not market science. This is not a new invention of some sort. It's just, I think why it blew up is because it is quite cool to be able to do that, because so far you couldn't. Or only for the $2,000 a month tier. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. So there's the dream that I've had of where we would get with our technology, and I actually do blame Apple for giving me such a clear vision of what I want. And what was it, back in the 80s, they did a video for this concept called the Knowledge Navigator.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And ever since I saw that, I'm like, this is exactly what I need. And we continue to get closer and closer to that. And as we see all these different pieces, it's like, man, all the elements are out there. Yeah. How now we just need someone to get them to come together so that we get exactly what that was. And then we get projects like OpenClaw. And I'm like, yep, that's another step closer to that vision.
Yeah.
And I'm excited for when we do get there. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to have a profound impact on not just how I use my devices, but how everyone uses their devices.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I'm super excited about what's happening with OpenClaw.
But my fear, Jeff, is that the industry will continue to only asymptotically approach that solution. We keep getting close. We keep getting close, but I mean, there's so many challenges in pulling all these engines together in a way that works well. And I guess today it seems like if you had sort of infinite compute and storage on your local device would solve a bunch of problems, because part of the problem is the privacy angle. You're not going to give Anthropic or OpenAI or Microsoft all that information that these things need to work well. So it has to run locally, I think.
Oh, or you mean, do
maybe
or,
maybe or there's an encrypted way to do it.
Yeah. Obfuscate. Or you approach it like I mean a lot of other other companies are approaching it, where it's like there's local models and it does certain things locally, and for other things where it's not so important, you can just go off, or it's more complex and you're like you can go off site and do it there, because the limitation. I mean, I'm running a beefy machine, like an M4 Max.
It wouldn't run on my machine.
And it's still, the models I can run are fairly limited. Like, I mean, there's one model I wanted to run, and then I saw, and that wasn't even one of the best models. Like, it was like one of the kind of middle of the ground models. And it's like, oh, I need 192 gigs of RAM. I'm like, yeah, I got 64, so nope.
well, the problem with using offsite compute isn't a solid problem. You can do it encrypted and all that stuff. The problem is the big corporations want that data.
Correct.
If they didn't, you know, if they said, "Oh yeah, we're going to make this totally secure. We're not going to look at your data," it would be fine. I wouldn't have any problem doing that. But there's no way I trust those guys.
Yeah.
With all my data, that's dangerous as hell.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I think it means. And you can't have cloud computing for an AI agent unless that company that's providing all that compute can make money somehow. So that means it would cost me a lot of money, you know, $1,000 a month or something. So
I
might get there, but
fair warning about this for sure. It can get very expensive very quickly. I think I saw Federico Vitici tried it, and I think he spent something, what was it? I think $3,000 a month on credits.
Right.
Wow. Like, ouch.
Yeah. So, I mean, it also the thing to learn, you don't always need the best, biggest model. Like the most complex model, the thinking models are not better at everything. Sometimes a simple model will do the job just fine because it's not a complex problem.
Well, don't you think that's part of the breakthrough that has to happen? Is if you have an agent that is sort of a generalized agent that does a bunch of different tasks, that it intelligently picks the small focus model for that particular task.
Yeah,
so that's it doesn't have to run a big foundation model for everything.
That's where the industry is going. It's more, I mean, Apple is doing that. Everybody's doing that now. Where it's like, okay, the orchestration of models, the model that orchestrates other models is kind of more where it's going. It's not getting bigger and bigger models. It's more, okay, a model that makes a decision what part of your task, even that's, it might be the same task, but it just breaks it down and says, okay, you do this, you do this, you do this. And then it puts it all together, like the project
that
manager.
That may be the secret sauce. That's the secret sauce.
Yeah, the project manager, right?
In the industry that I worked in, one of the most valuable parts of our IP, we did optimization of search, for example. One of the most valuable parts of the company was, as you're running through a circuit, figuring out which optimization engine to run at a particular time. Everybody knew all the engines. That wasn't a secret. It was how you orchestrated them. That was the secret sauce.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. This is all super complex and very fascinating and interesting. What's not complex is our technologies. Well, it is complex, but not for us, because what they're doing is making sure we have all the resources that we need, all the models, if you will, to be able to live stream shows to you every single week, and to have a place for the website to live and show files to live, so you can watch and listen to the recordings anytime you want. And without their very generous support, we would not be able to do the things that we do. So thank you to Awe Technologies for being our sponsor. Also, for those of you that are like, gee, Jeff, I never listened to you. So what is Awe Technologies? Well, listen this time. It's a company that lets you do the remote monitoring of construction project sites. If you have a facility where you need to have remote monitoring, I'm sure they can set you up with that too. And whatever it is that you need, they can handle that. So if you have a project, a location, whatever, where you need to have that remote monitoring, check them out. Their website is awetechnologies, that's awetechnologies.co.uk. And thanks again, Awe Technologies, for being so awesome. All right. Well, after that clearly brilliant segue into talking about Awe Technologies, I would love, Patrice, to know more about how our live chat works. Can you help me out with that, please?
Yeah, we have a really cool live chat. I was literally just checking because I've somehow lost my cool thing that I picked last week on the Mac show. So I was just looking at our chat transcript. More on that in a second. So we have a live stream solution. We do not rely on the big companies like YouTube or Google, especially, a lot of people are using. We run our own, so on a server that's sponsored by Awe Technologies. So when we are streaming this live, Thursdays, 7 p.m. UK time, whatever time that is in your time zone, you head over to live.britishtechnetwork.com and you can see us like make the show. Like there's a pre-show and tiny post-show often, and a live chat. And of course, the main event, the main show, you can talk to us, you can chat with us, you can see the links as we're posting them. We post a lot of extra things. Like I saw, for example, thanks Ian, that you posted the VM skill for OpenClaw and also the links to OpenClaw itself. So thank you. Yeah, we do post. Like in the pre-show, we had earrings, if you're interested in that. Two core links for earrings. So yeah, it's just a really cool solution. No registration required. Just go there. It generates a name for you. You can change it if you want. And there's a key in DNA, for example, that was briefly in the chat. Okay. Yeah, if you want, purple button up top, change name, change your name. It's very easy. So that's our live stream. And if you, like me, need the transcript, it's also available. I don't know, you missed the show. You need to look up the show from last week to figure out what your cool thing was last week. BritishTechNetwork.com/chat, pick a date, and if you pick today's date, which is Thursday, February 5th, 2026, then you will see what we talked about on this very show.
Awesome. Thank you for doing that, Patrice.
You're welcome.
And thank you for all the hard work that you put in to getting us up to date. I know it's been a couple years, but still, every single week, I appreciate just hopping in here and saying, look at this. That's so cool. So thank you. All right. And now it's time for some cool things. And it looks like, Ian, you have the first cool thing in the chat. So tell us about that.
Indeedy. It's the microphone I'm using this evening, which I will move up so you can see. It's just a little basic, cheapy. I wanted a Lavalier mic to plug into my phone to do some recording a while ago, and I didn't want to spend a lot of money out and tell you if it was any use or not. So I picked these up from AliExpress. They're, I think, a knockoff of a more popular brand. I mean, not entirely sure whose they've stolen, but they're 15 UK pounds. And it, as you can hear tonight, I'm sounding usual, normal, all clear. So that seems to work quite well. It comes a little sendy. You plug it into a USB socket. It pairs up with this thing. The whole shooting match charges up in the USB case that comes with it. It's got a nice little display on it which tells you the charge. I'm impressed. If you guys say this, I sound good. So I'm taking that as a win. I should be using them more often.
And I looked at the price in US, $23.33.
Wow. Yeah, not big money then at all, really, to get, to dip your finger in the water to kind of overlook. A good set is 100, isn't it? I mean, I think the ones that Ewan was using a while ago, he was saying those were sort of 80, 90 quid, I think, for a good set.
So, very nice. Cool. All right. Tom, it's your turn.
My cool thing is a sports ball thing.
I don't even know what that means.
I was waiting for the reaction. It's a, my cool thing is a book called Football by a guy named Chuck Klosterman. And Chuck Klosterman is a writer from, I think he originally grew up in South Dakota. He lives in Oregon now. And he's kind of a pop culture author, I'd put it that way, but he's also a big sports fan. And he, since it's Super Bowl week, I brought this. He wrote a book about American football. And because it's Chuck Klosterman, it's kind of about football, but it's also more of a discussion about American society and football's mm-hmm. place in that society. And he's a really good author. He's pretty quirky and eccentric. And he makes very strange observations and comparisons and uses strange metaphors. Anyway, if you like pop culture, if you like slightly eccentric writing styles, I'd recommend this book. Probably not football fair, but in our audience, but other Chuck Klosterman books. If you're not interested in the sport of football and you have to read one book about football, this would be the one.
Okay, cool.
Might well have a look at that.
Have it on Audible. It'll probably give you a better insight into the odd psyche of U.S. citizens, I'm guessing.
Yeah, and it talks about why football is so popular, as an entertainment thing, not as a sports thing, but as entertainment, and why it fits with television so well, and why that makes it so popular, and the angle of betting and how it makes it popular. You know, it goes cool. into that kind of stuff.
Cool. All right, Patrice, it's your turn.
It's my turn. Okay, I'll throw the link in the chat. It is, I think, not a surprise. There's a new Star Trek on the horizon. Well, it's not on the horizon. It's already in your eye holes. I don't know. It's already streaming. Let's put it this way.
In my what?
In your eye holes, yes. Okay. It's already streaming. So it's called Star Trek Starfleet Academy. And it is literally a Starfleet Academy. It's the first, it plays in the 32nd century, so post Discovery. And I think ish, post Discovery ish, or at the same time, like somewhere around that. And it's the first class of Starfleet Academy cadets after a couple hundred years, something like that. After a long time.
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that. So after the burn and all of that. So it's a really interesting thing. The academy itself is also partially at least a ship. So sometimes they're in San Francisco, sometimes they're in space. It's definitely more. They're trying to attract new audiences, younger audiences, which is great. And you can tell it's more like young adult topics, of course, and like high schools and all of that. But it is still very, very, very enjoyable for the hardcore Star Trek fans. At least I think so. I mean, you know, the usual. There's people complaining, oh, this is not Star Trek, blah, 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 all of that. I was a little bit critical. The first two episodes had major flaws, as basically every Star Trek show and most other shows have in the first season. There is some things that work and some things that don't. But it's getting better and better now. I'm like, the last couple episodes, I was basically crying like halfway through the show, usually towards the end. Like basically it would start somewhere in the middle and then I would not stop until the end. It was that good. They figured out the balance between having, let's say, age-appropriate, interesting stories and also kind of something for the long-term fans, right? Something for the new fans, something for the old fans. It was in the beginning a little bit obvious and clunky, and they've gotten better at it, making it more subtle or weaving it better into the storylines. So that's good. And it's there's still something in the beginning. I'm like, oh, it's this story or whatever, or it's going to be this. But now they're subverting that. It's like you think, this is going to be this story. Whatever. Okay, I'll watch it. And then halfway through, you're like, oh, it's not that story. It just completely turned around. And so it's good. And it has, like I said, a great cast. It has some known characters, some known actors. Robert Picardo, I think, was probably well-known. Holly Hunter is there. Bunch of others you've seen, and a lot of cameos like this. I'm not going to tell you what happened this week, but there were tons of cameos this week, but very subtle and very well done. So if you couldn't tell, then go back and watch it again. There's at least three that I just off the top of my head can name. It's really funny. And as I said, it's young adults, which is right up my alley. I love young adult stories, so fun.
I did watch this week's episode before we recorded today, based on the the alert that Patrice gave.
Yes, I was like, and, I was crying.
it was a really well done episode. One of the things that stood out to me in this, many things stood out, but one of the things stood out: Tawny Newsom from Star Trek Lower Decks. She was a writer for this episode.
Yes.
And she is an actor in the episode as well.
Yes. I didn't want to spoil that, but yes, you're right.
Oh, crap.
But it's fine, because try figuring out who she played. It's not as easy as you think.
I agree. Yep. I thought it was a really well done episode, and it did not go where I thought it was going to go.
Which is good.
Which is great. Yes. And yeah, it was really well done. I think it's a really good series. I'm with you. The first couple episodes were a little rough.
Yeah, like every show and every Star Trek show, especially.
Yeah, but I mean, Star Trek shows, the first season is usually pretty much all rough.
Yes.
But I think after those first couple episodes, it's like really kicked it up a notch.
Yeah, I mean, they also have to, because they don't have the 20-something episodes that other shows get.
Right. excellent pick.
Yes.
All right. So then my pick, I'm going to stick with the TV theme. 50th anniversary of the Muppet Show TV series. And on the 50th anniversary, which I believe was yesterday, they released a new Muppet Show episode.
Wow.
So like the half hour format. In the theater, Kermit the Frog is the manager and the host. Seth Rogen is an executive producer for this. Their guest of the week, Sabrina Carpenter, and she does an excellent job. She understood the role, that the assignment of being a guest on the Muppet Show, which is pretty impressive, because she's in her 20s and late 20s, and the Muppet Show had run its whole course and was done well before she was ever even born. But she got how to do this. And Seth Rogen did an amazing job of being true to the series. And so, of course, I watched this episode last night and absolutely loved it. It's just wonderful. So if you're a fan of the Muppet Show, oh my God, your first new episode in decades. If you're new to the Muppet Show, this is a really fun way to get into experiencing something that was a part of our childhood. And it's just wonderful entertainment. It's done so well. And what Seth is hoping is that this is the first of many new Muppet Show episodes. So he definitely has a motive here beyond he's a Muppet fan and wanted to do a Muppet Show episode. He wants this to become a regular thing.
I can hear
this. I hope he does.
Yes, me too. Me too. I can hear a certain Kelly Gaumont already squealing.
Kelly and I have been talking about this already.
Mm-hmm.
And I can imagine. And her
Hi Kelly.
Yeah, hi Kelly. Kelly's take on this is in line with mine, which is this is an absolute delight. It is a half hour of pure joy. Just mm-hmm. go watch it.
And we'll be watching that when I go back in the house.
And
it can't be any better than that.
No, it can't. And I'm sure you watched Muppet Show back in the day. And when you watch this, you're going to be taken back to where you were when you first watched the show. It's just so much fun. And Tom, you can be our Dr. Bunsen Honeydew if you want. that is a compliment, just to be clear.
Yeah, I'm a little old for Muppets. I was, you know, probably 5 years too old for Muppets, but they were certainly a popular thing with all the kids. And I think I'm sure Disney is happy to make a successful commercial show out of this IP.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
I guess you could say that Muppet IP is has been underutilized for the last few years.
Oh yeah. Put it that way.
They have had some pretty successful
movies,
shows.
Yeah. Yeah.
From the Muppet IP. Some of them mm-hmm. actual Muppets, some of them animated, which to me is so weird because now it's not Muppets anymore, but whatever. But
this is the point, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, what's the point?
Yeah, and but Tom, Muppet Show, even though it started a little late for you, while it's clearly targeted as something for kids, it's also targeted as a family show.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot that happens in every episode of The Muppet Show that kids aren't going to get, and it's for the adults.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like watching the Flintstones, right? Yeah.
So, I mean, I watched The Muppet Show in German, just saying. And it is a thing in German. So is the Sesame Street. It's called Sesamstraße. But yeah, it was a thing when mm-hmm. I was a kid. I mean, I was too old. Like, sorry, I was too young to have it watched when it first broadcast, but they... Like, it was on, like, in the 90s, like, on TV.
Yeah. Yeah. I was young when The Muppet Show aired originally. Mm-hmm. But I did get to watch The Muppet Show when it aired originally, nice. Which to me is just a really cool thing. So, anyhow, Muppet Show.
It is a cool thing.
Yeah. It's on Disney Plus, although I believe that ABC affiliates are airing it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe there's multiple ways to get at this episode without requiring a Disney Plus subscription.
Mm-hmm. Good to know.
All right. Mm-hmm. So it is now time to wrap up. And this episode today has just been so much fun and so interesting for me that we have run way over.
Oh, way over, yeah.
I'm okay with that. I feel like I'm pulling a Ewan today by not working to keep the show down to an hour. Patrice, where can people find you?
Well, I'm here every week on the Big Show on Thursdays and also tomorrow, and every week on the Meg Show on Fridays. Let's see what we'll talk about tomorrow on the show. Just got an article sent, so... That will be one. Everything I'm doing on my website, thepatrice.com. That's where the podcasts are, where the projects are, where the social media links are, and something brand spanking new I just published a couple days ago, and I literally just pushed today's cool thing. I added a cool thing list. I've collected, I had a big, massive markdown file with all the cool things, or almost all of them. I might have forgotten someone somewhere, can happen, but should be pretty close to all of the cool things I've ever picked on either the Big Show, the Mac Show, or Mac Voices. Like Mac Voices, the Christmas specials. Christmas, whatever it was called. Holiday Gift Guide, I think it's called. And yeah, the document was just getting too big and unwieldy, and I had to scroll down from the bottom to the top because that's where the next thing is I want to pick and whatever. So I just threw it on my website. So there's now a cool thing, and you can go in and see from 2019, somewhere in November, I want to say, to today, all the cool things I've ever picked. All the crazy shit I thought was cool. So go there, cool things, have a look. So, awesome. And then with you, Jeff, of course, Retro Rewatch.
Retro Rewatch.
We rewatch retro TV shows. We talk about it. We have fun. Jeff forgets half of it or gets it in the wrong order. Yep. That's what we do. And we published a, since we're in the Stargate SG-1 season 3, kind of in between period between seasons where we do other stuff, we published last week a show that I got got the great pleasure introducing you, Jeff, to, which was Charmed, the sisters. And
that
was,
oh, that was a long while ago.
That was, yeah, I mean, it's like also like early 2000s. So it works pretty well for our, like, what we want to do, like retro TV shows. It was a lot of fun. Jeff got some characters confused, if that was funny.
Oh my god, I yes. did. Like, and yeah. in the most ridiculous way.
Yes. So it is one of my all-time favorite shows, and I'm very happy that Jeff watched it and seemed to enjoy it. Like, I mean, for I that it was it. Completely different, not a sci-fi show, whatever. So it was definitely something out of the ordinary for us. So go to retrorewatch.com and watch it. And I can tell you something tomorrow or somewhere this weekend, because I'm sometimes bad with editing and forget it and then do it on Sunday, like this week. There will be another one with another show. And it's, again, completely different. It's not a, whatever, magic show. It's not sci-fi. It's completely different again. So we're having fun. So that's coming up this week.
I am so glad we do that show together.
Me too.
Awesome. All right. Tom, top that. Where can people find you?
Yeah, top that. People can find me on Mastodon. I am TomF at sfba.social. And Sunday afternoon, you may find me in the Santa Clara County Jail if things go wrong.
Okay.
Well, hope not. If so, I'm sure we can figure out a way for Ewan to bail you out in time to be back here for the big show.
That's true. Yes. We'll send you in.
Yeah.
Yep.
What wait. Could possibly go wrong?
I'll give you a list of bail bondsmen in San Jose.
Excellent. So, Ian, where can people find you?
People can find me here every Thursday on the big show. If I'm not here, then I'm traveling. But yeah, if not, I'm here, usually here on the big show. And otherwise, I'm in the Slack room and I'm on LinkedIn. My name's Ian Grant. I work for Veeam, so that's the easiest place to find me social media-wise. I don't do much with any of the others.
Awesome. All right. Then for me, Jay Gamut on the various social medias, mostly on Mastodon and PixelFed and Blue Sky. Then for shows, Tuesdays on Chuck Joyner's Mac Voices Live, Thursdays on Dave Ginsberg's In Touch with iOS, here on the British Tech Network for the Big Show and the Mac Show. Brian Chaffin and I do the Context Machine, and as Patrice has already pointed out, we do Retro Rewatch. And if you thought Charmed was an interesting show for me to watch and talk about, I think you'll be equally pleased and surprised with this week's episode.
Yeah, I was actually surprised you had never seen this show. So same as SG1. I
hadn't seen a single episode until this. Yep. Hey, this has been so much fun. Thank you to the three of you for making my Thursday morning afternoon at this point. Just so much fun. This has been absolutely wonderful. And I do look forward to spending time with you every single week. So thank you. Hey, everyone that's watching, listening live, participating in the live chat, thank you to all of you for being here and being part of the show. Everyone that watches and listens later, thank you for being part of this as well. All of you, you rock. Hey, Ewan, thanks for being you. Muller, thanks for making sure we have people for shows. And Aw Technologies, thank you for being our sponsor. And with that, hey, everyone, don't forget to tune in tomorrow for the Mac show. And then come back again next Thursday for the big show. And everyone, have an awesome weekend.